Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Illustration Department Podcast. My name is Giuseppe Castellano. In this podcast, I talk to folks in illustration, graphic design, publishing, animation, and other creative fields about their beginnings, their successes, and the bumps and bruises they've experienced along the way. In this episode, my guest is Kirk Benshoff, art director at First Second, an imprint of Macmillan Publishers. It's common knowledge at this point that the graphic novel format is booming in publishing. What isn't as commonly known is how they get published. Among other topics, Kirk and I talk about how he and his team at First Second work with graphic novel creators. From acquiring a pitch to proofing final files, we cover the art process, speech bubbles, trim sizes and page count, schedules, and more. And Kirk shares the one thing he wishes everyone would know about graphic novels. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Where did you grow up?
Massachusetts, Middleborough, Massachusetts, and sleepy New England.
Is that where you are now?
Yeah. I actually like where I grew up because it's right in between Boston and Cape Cod. So if I needed city, I could drive 40 minutes in one direction. And if I wanted beach, I drove 40 minutes in the other. It's nice.
Is your family far enough away from Boston to not have the Boston accent?
Yeah. Well, they're actually all like from Ohio. So.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I escaped that.
Nice.
There's no cars over here.
Just cars, no cats. How did you, like, when did you first realize that, like, being an art director was a thing?
That's actually a really interesting question. Where I went to school, it was a very studio-centric school. Mm-hmm. So we were learning about, like, the Paul Rands, the Massimo Vignellis, these studio designers. So that's kind of what the headspace when I left school.
Right.
So the first number of years out, I was bouncing around between a ton of different industries. You know, I started in medical publishing, then I, you know, worked for like a local toy company, then I worked for like the Knitting Factory for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, it took, I would say, a solid few years out of school to like realize like, oh, this is what an art director does. So yeah. It's a little embarrassing.
Where'd you go to school?
Rochester Institute of Technology.
Nice.
Upstate New York.
Yeah, totally. That's a good school.
Yeah, I liked it. It was eclectic. Like you had like the science majors, the fine art majors, the School for American Craftsmen, the design, photography, printing. Like it was pretty, it's a pretty cool, school.
Yeah. I didn't really realize what an art director was until maybe junior year of college, something like that, when teachers started talking about art directors as these people who buy art or hire designers, you know, and we were getting recommendations to contact, you know, phone numbers. They were giving us phone numbers. Like, here's the phone number of Stephen Heller. You can call him and show him your portfolio. So that was kind of the first introduction. And then I got into publishing it right after school. And my boss was the art director, so I, you know, obviously saw firsthand, like, okay, right, got it. This is a job, and it looks good, and I want to be this.
And it's like when you do it, it's fun.
Exactly. So fast forward, now you're at Macmillan.
Yes.
How long have you been there?
I'm coming up on 3 years.
Nice. What exactly is your title, and what exactly does that mean?
So I'm the art director at First Second, and so I'm managing the design and workflow for that imprint. But then my team is also handling the graphic novels for Roaring Brook and FSG as well. So we're just kind of like a big hot pot of graphic novels in my team.
How many designers do you lead?
Two. I have Sunny Lee and Molly Johansson, and they're absolutely phenomenal. They're like my dream team. They're amazing.
How many books do you folks design over the course of a year? It probably fluctuates.
I would say it's a little bit of a two-part question. I mean, like, so we're three seasons and we average out about 20 books a season. So But those are the books that we've launched and are ready to go. And you know, we're sort of actively working and putting those books together. Mm-hmm. Our development arc for graphic novels is, you know, can be, you know, give or take like 2 years, because, you know, it's for the most part one person working on them. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of sort of initial work that we're doing with our creators at that point. So for that part of the process, we have like over 100, you know, projects that are sort of in various stages of development that we're actively working on.
Mm. We're going to talk a little bit about that process in a minute. But first, I know Mark Siegel. He was a design assistant at Simon & Schuster. I think just for Little Simon, but then he might have moved over to other imprints at Simon & Schuster, and then all of a sudden he left and founded First Second. He went from like kind of design assistant, so he wasn't like creative director or art director or editorial director. He was you know, a mid-level designer, and then just left and founded First Second. And we were like, oh, okay, you can do that. Wow, good for you. And yeah, he was, I mean, I don't know when First Second exactly was founded, 2002, 3, 1, something.
Oh, yeah, it was like 2006 or something like around there. I can never remember myself.
But 2006, I mean, that's 2006. And now we're talking about how hot graphic novels are. I mean, they've been hot for a little while now. But I think First Second, I think it's fair to say, what I'm trying to get at is that First Second and Mark kind of started the ball rolling. Would that be fair to say?
I would. Yeah, I would. You know, Mark, you know, and he eventually brought on Calista Brill, and the two of them are sort of leading the editorial lead in the imprint. And it's cool. I think one of the things I really like about First Second is, I mean, first off, you know, it's a dedicated graphic novel imprint. Like, that's all we do. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't do prose. We don't do novelty or anything like that. Like, everything is purely graphic novels. And mm-hmm. their ethos is really to push that comic medium, you know, where, you know, if there's something that hasn't been done before, especially in the U.S. market, and if it's being done well, they want to publish it. And then we publish a range. Like, we're starting from picture book to early reader, middle grade to YA, and then we publish on through adult as well. So mm-hmm. it's cool because you're really tapping into different sensibilities. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fresh. You know, there's always new things to be tackling.
Sure. What's the difference between a comic and a graphic novel?
You know, the way I've always defined it, you know, it's like a comic is like, you know, the medium, you know, but then you have like a graphic novel and you have a comic book. A comic book is a serialized story, you know, so like when you're reading your Batmans, your Spider-Mans and all that, that's a comic book. But like when you have a singular story, that's going to be your graphic novel.
Gotcha. So I talked to a lot of illustrators, day in and day out, and graphic novels come up a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Specifically, how do you submit to a publisher if you want to publish a graphic novel is usually the most common question. And so I'll ask you that, you know, I'm hesitating here because this is like a 17-hour long conversation. I want to try to like jam it into, you know, 10, 15, right, 20 minutes or something. But from beginning to end, you know, from an illustrator standpoint, how do they submit to First Second? We'll start there, and then I have other questions.
There's two main avenues. I think the obvious one is going to be, you know, getting yourself an agent and having an agent kind of rep you. A lot of agents are focusing on graphic novels right now because there is such a demand for it. Mm-hmm. And there's so many more imprints now dedicated to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the agents are a great avenue because they're going to be able to, you know, field any advice early and they may also have a good sense of the a good home for a project as well. The other side of it, though, is, and this is something I think is unique about comics, is that, you know, like if you're publishing on your own, you know, whether you're serializing it on Instagram or you're, you know, you're part of these more social communities that are centered around comics, mm-hmm. you know, like publishing it and building your own base is like says a lot, you know, I mm-hmm. mean, you're getting immediate feedback, you're, you know, like, I mean, I guess in the grand scheme of things, right, it's like you make your product and how do you distribute it? But there's so many options right now for people to kind of distribute their own comics on their own and build an audience. And then that can build its own buzz and that can bubble up to the surface. And, you know, I know we've found projects that way a mm-hmm. ton of times. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just being active, really.
Right. You know what I wonder? This is probably a question from Mark. You might have experienced some of this. How did Macmillan's sales department respond to this idea of, you know, we're going to publish graphic novels? You know, they've been used to selling to their buyers other formats, you know, the typical picture yeah. books and the board books and readers and whatnot, coloring books and stuff, but not graphic novels. And then now all of a sudden at an acquisitions meeting or a sales meeting, or, you know, here's this graphic novel, and I wonder what the sales team said early yeah. on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be curious, too. I mean, there's a part of me that feels like they wouldn't be too, you know, caught off guard. I mean, it's not like people hadn't been publishing graphic novels.
Right.
If anything, I think one of the things that For Second and, you know, even graphics at Scholastic, like, you know, those two imprints had done that was different was that they were dedicated imprints in graphic novels. Like that's all they were doing. And I think, and I'd be, you know, same here. Like I'd be curious to know, like, you know, like if, what the reaction was knowing that there was going to be a lot more of them.
Right. Yeah. Be. Was there, I'm sort of assuming there was hesitancy, but maybe not.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting.
In terms of acquisition, right? So, This illustrator has written, has illustrated, mm-hmm. has submitted. Mm-hmm. And it isn't just one person. It isn't just Mark. It isn't just you. It isn't just anyone else at First Second saying, this is cool. Let's hit print. Let's send them money and then mm-hmm. print the book. There are other factors that go into deciding what gets published and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And again, this is another hour-long conversation talking about acquisitions of graphic novel at a major publishing house. But just in Cliff's Notes version, how's it look at First Second? You know, is there? I assume there's an acquisitions meeting, but you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's not reinventing the wheel. I mean, it's the same acquisitions meeting that the rest of MCPG, Macmillan Children's Publishing Group, goes to, and mm-hmm. you know, and it's the same MO where. You know, the book is presented to the group, you know, numbers are presented and conversations are had between sales, marketing, foreign rights, school and library. Everybody kind of, you know, talks, you know, about like whether they like the book or not, A to Z bullet point. I'm just going to jump all over the place here. You know, like two, do they see it as like something that they can sell? Three, mm-hmm. you know, are there any concerns with it? You know, four, what do the numbers look like when they run the P&L or the profit and loss mm-hmm. Document? And so it's pretty, you know, pretty standard.
Yeah. Yeah. The profit and loss. What is it? A profit and loss form, I guess. Form, you know, document yeah. form. That's a fascinating part of the process because it's yeah. essentially, you know, you plug in all this information, but so much of it is guesswork, you know, like, well, the first yeah. print run is 35,000 and you get a sense from the sales department that you yeah. get a sense like they're really psyched and they're like, oh my God, I could totally sell 5,000 copies to this X buyer or this buyer. So right. the editor gathers that information. It is still guesswork though. You know that, like, okay, well, let's yeah. why don't we print 10,000 copies on our first run Okay, so it's 10,000 copies, and the graphic novel costs whatever, $24.99 or whatever it costs. And you plug in that formula, you get either we're going to make money on this or we're not. And it's not we're going to make $1 million on this. It's usually like, well, yeah, we'll make a couple thousand dollars profit on this after we pay everybody and pay for everything that makes this book.
Yeah,
and it's a part of publishing that I don't think gets batted around a lot in the public discourse.
And I agree. And I mean, and I think in the grand scheme of things, no matter, you know, what the product is, whether it's a graphic novel, a picture book, or a prose book, you know, like ultimately, you know, like when a publishing house says that they want to acquire a book and publish it, they're taking a gamble. Like they're hedging their bets that it's going to be successful. But you're right. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, all of it is sort of educated guesses and, you know, calculating like whether we think this is going to be working. There's so many, I mean, that's a thing. And you're right, this is like a whole other like hour long conversation, but there's like so many factors that can play into the success or the sort of the blasé performance of a book.
Right.
So,
right. How many pages is a typical, standard graphic novel?
It can range. I mean, I would say like I'm trying to do my math because I'm terrible at remembering signatures. It could be like the low hundreds would probably be on the low end. But we have books that can go as high, like go over 300, like a 300-400 page count.
Right.
Like they range.
Yeah. And the trim size, again,
same.
Changes.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, middle grade tends to be a bit more standardized because we're trying to get these books in the same retailers, which trim plays a factor in that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But once we start getting into YA and adult, and even subject matter can play into it, you know, like if we have a nonfiction book, we may want to, you know, do that in a larger trim.
Mm-hmm. But what's like so just again, for someone listening who wants to create a graphic novel, they want to put together a PDF that they're going to submit to an agent or a publisher. What should their trim be for that dummy?
Honestly, you know, I would say like not to worry about it at that point. You know, like I would say like you like look at it into two halves. The first half is like if you have a product that you are serializing on your own, pick a dimension for it and run with it. And, you know, like a publisher will adjust as necessary to put it out in the end.
Gotcha.
For those creators who are want to do their due diligence, you can, you know, go into a bookstore, look at your comp titles and, you know, get base measurements from that. Mm-hmm. But if you have something that you have not created yet, like if you have like an idea, so like you're bringing into acquisitions, like, you know, the first five pages of the book is sort of like a sample for the acquisitions meeting to read. And then you have an outline and, you know, you have yet to create the book. You know, that's, you know, all those details are stuff that we would actually iron out later.
Right. Yeah. 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 I usually tell illustrators they don't have to go to a bookstore. They just go online, find comp titles, find graphic novels that they like, they've read, that, you know, maybe one's in their house. Just get a ruler out, measure it, and there you go.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so this, again, this illustrator listening is taking notes and I got it. How many pages should they finish off? I mean, should it be like full manuscript in Microsoft Word doc and then 5, 10, 20 fully illustrated initial pages and then sketches for the rest? Or what would be the ideal? What would you, or what would your team like to see when it comes to submissions?
If this isn't some like an active project that is being, you know, worked on and serialized already, because in that scenario, we could look at that and we get like, we can understand what the comic is all about. Like we understand like the pacing, the story, the art style, everything. If you're creating something from scratch, really, you know, it's up to your discretion to really to develop, but like really think about like what is going to communicate the product. I mean, going back to the acquisitions meeting, you know, the company is ultimately hedging a bet on this project, mm-hmm. you know, so they're going to want as much information as possible. Yeah. And so,
especially because they're going to spend a lot of money on you.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, you know, think about like what is going to, you know, like truly give a sense. And I would say, you know, like, is it a chapter or is it like, you know, 10, 20 pages, mm-hmm. And then an outline, or maybe it's an outline and the first, you know, 5 pages or, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, like if maybe the art style is super simple and, mm-hmm. you know, once you get it, you understand it. And then when you read the outline, you're getting mm-hmm. a range. I think it depends on the project, the complexity of the project, but I think, you know, in some ways that's where the agent comes in. Cause I think sure. the agent would be able to sort of advise and say, you know, this is, I think you have a lot of really great ingredients, but, you know, flush this part out a little bit more and that part out a little bit more. And that's yeah. going to increase our chances.
Got it. By the way, you just said flush this out. And it makes me happy to hear you say flush because it makes more sense to me to say flush things out than flesh things out. I don't get flesh things out. I'm too lazy to look up like the origin of fleshing it out, but that just sounds bizarre. But flushing it out sounds perfect. It's yeah. exactly what you want to do. You want to flush something out. You want to take it from here and flush it out to there.
Right.
I don't know. Anyway, just well, a little side note. So the good news, from what I'm hearing, this is good news because there is no formula. There is no exact number of, like, it's not like you have to have X number right. of pages. You have to have this. You have to have this. You do have to have some judgment and consider that if you want to submit a graphic novel to a publisher and get tens of thousands of dollars for that project, if you're writing it and illustrating it, then, you know, you can't just like put a bunch of doodles on a napkin and throw it in right. a manila envelope and send it to somebody and right. be like, why isn't anyone acquiring? Like, you have to pitch it.
Yeah. And I would say too, you know, I think one of the things in, you know, one of the things that makes graphic novels so difficult, especially when you have one person doing everything, is it gets overwhelming with the decisions. Mm-hmm. Like it gets overwhelming trying to think about all the little things that are going to be done in the book. I would say when you're working on your pitch, really think about the broad strokes, the macro, mm-hmm. you know, overview of the book. Don't get into the weeds about the details. Like, you know, that's something that I will help you with later, mm-hmm. you know? So, you know, like, you know, don't worry about the things like the, what kind of font am I going to be using or this kind of thing? Like really just think about like, what's the story, what's the general art style going to be like. And, you know, and then kind of think about the package in that sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then like if the project is acquired and then, you know, like we have steps where like we have where the details are focused on and we iron out.
Gotcha. Lettering, text. So, you're not going to look at something and say to yourself, and your team will meet and look at something and say, well, the art's great and the story's great, but their lettering is terrible. Like, you guys will help with that, you know? Yes. So when in doubt, just go simple with your lettering. You'll never not acquire a book just because they picked the wrong font for text, right?
Exactly. No, yeah, exactly. Like that yeah. is absolutely something that we can, yeah, like address and fix and, you know, absolutely. Yeah. yeah.
So now the book is acquired, right? And the baton has now been passed over to the design department. You are now working with the creator, with the illustrator, you know. Again, I know it depends and some folks don't need hand holding and some do, but generally speaking, from that point to when the final files go to the printer, what does that look like? I mean, is there constant communication? Is there lots of emailing back and forth? Are you helping? Are you guiding them? All of the above? What's that look like?
It's all the above. Yeah, but I mean, fundamentally though, like there's 4 parts, you know, to the whole thing. The first part is a kickoff call. Kickoff call, like, and I always do it as a call. Yeah. I won't do it as email. I won't do it, you know, like through any other kind of passive communication.
It's
like
old school.
And It is. You know, yeah. it's
you
like
you got a rotary phone on your desk.
I kind of wish I did, you know, yeah. so I can angrily like dial a number if I have to.
Great.
Yeah. I'm calming down slowly waiting for this now.
Kirk, there are listeners. You realize there are listeners who are like, what's a rotary phone? sorry, okay. Not to derail. So one,
I know,
the call.
I just feel old all of a sudden.
Yeah, sorry. One, but, the call.
Yeah, so like we had, so our first, the first thing is that call. And it's really, besides talking about process with people I haven't worked with before, the first big thing that we're going over is like, how are they creating their book? Because I am astounded every day at my job at how differently people will create their comics. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, some people start traditionally and then go digitally. Some people start digitally and then go traditionally. Some people toggle, like go traditional, digital, back to traditional, you name it. People are using a range of software now, and the software in of itself can affect what, how we do things on our end later. So a lot of it is just really kind of getting into their head about how they're making the book. But then a step further is like, what, you know, like you did this pitch, it was acquired. Now, like, what is your vision? Like, what are your goals for this book? Mm-hmm. And that gives me a chance to like talk and kind of get that on my radar, you know, and it could be something stylistically, you know, with art that somebody wants to do or with their color. Or it could even be with text. I mean, just recently I had a project where the creator was using English, Korean, and Japanese text. And, you know, it's like I need to know that early so I could line up people to work on the project who could navigate, you know, those languages. So the kickoff call is the absolute first thing that I do.
Okay.
And then two through four is sort of our general arc for a book. Two is going to be, you know, like the interior development. So that's going to be, you know, a traditional pencil thumbnails, then into pencil sketches, onto inks, onto color. Mm-hmm. Or it could be, you know, like maybe somebody doesn't really have like a pencil style. Maybe they kind of just go right into their inking style. But this overall arc is really like the main timeline. And what I'm there for is really is a resource and a sounding board for anything. Right. You know, it could be, you know, my Photoshop is giving me a stupid error, or it could be, you know, I'm working on this nonfiction book and I have to communicate some complex ideas and I'm, you know, have a kind of a mental block. Can we brainstorm on this section? Or it could be, I just finished this scene. Can you check it out? You know, really it's just sort of this like broad, like as people are working, because I don't want to be a distraction when people are working, you know, like it's intense. It's all encompassing. So I kind of just tell people like, look, use me, I'm here, but you know, let me know how I can be a help whenever you need it.
I gotcha. So three.
The third part, and this is a floating step. This is something that we can technically do at any point during the interior development, but I always urge my creators to do this in the early sort of sketch stage because of how malleable that stage is. We have a thing called proof of concept stage. And basically the proof of concept stage is influenced by sample pages in prose design, where we're basically creating a style guide for the book. So so when we start working on this, I'm talking to my creators and saying like, what are all the stylistic instances that are going to be in the book? So is there a main timeline with a color palette, but then we're going to have a flashback scene and there's going to be a color palette change for that flashback scene. Let's look at a spread of each of those instances. There's a inking style. Like I have a character, they eat too much sugar and they get hyperactive and we change the inking style to reflect that. Let's look at that. You know, we're going through and we're looking at all these instances to see, and maybe it's an environment change. You know, like kind of a steel pale city scenes, but then, you know, we move to like lush forest scenes. We're looking at all these, and then while we're looking at these pages, this also gives me a chance to look at how the balloons are going to look, what's the lettering going to look like, mm-hmm. how big is the lettering going to be, what's the space going to be like between the text and the outer edge of the balloon. We're looking at all these details, and ultimately we want to make sure that everything's working before we repeat these decisions 250 some odd pages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, unfortunately, it's like a lot of times, like, people will look and it'll be, the book is almost done, and somebody will be like, is that text a little too small? Like, this is not the time to be noting
that. Right. Or like, maybe there's a detail on the character that ends up changing halfway through, and at the end it's like, wait a minute, didn't they have 5 stripes on their shirt? Why is there 3?
Exactly.
And you have, like, 57 pages of the character having the wrong, detail on their shirt, which would be awful.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're looking to see how everything's looking. And this also gives us a chance to kind of get a better sense of, like, the visual techniques that we're using in the book.
Okay.
And can that be pushed? Like, we have some great ideas here, but, maybe we can actually push this, because a lot of times creators are making these decisions as they go, as they're working on the pages. Mm-hmm. And so, but this, we're kind of shifting the thinking a little bit and saying, hey, let's think about this early. Let's think about these visual techniques as tools, and how can we best use these tools.
Right.
And then, once we have all of our pages, then I ask my creators, I say, I want you guys to give me these pages as if they were final. So work them up to the final style, give them to me as the final files. So this gives me a chance to, I'm looking at under the hood, confirming the trim, making sure the trim's the correct size. Is that?
Please don't tell me that happens.
A lot.
Oh, Jesus.
It's insane. you're just kind of like,
hey, Kirk, here's all the art. And you're like, the trim was 5x7, not 6x9. You know that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's it's amazing. And so we're looking, we're checking trim, we're checking resolution, we're checking to make sure that the files are set up correctly. Especially if someone's doing a limited color, like we're printing the book in, say, 2 Pantone inks.
Right.
It gives us a chance to make sure that those are set up correctly. And then all of this, all the proof of concept pages end up culminating into early proofs, like early test proofs.
Yeah.
For first second, we actually proof everything in the same place that we'll proof the final book.
Yep.
And now that we're working remotely, we have like multiple sets sent everywhere. But like the editor gets a set, the creators get a set, I get a set. And then this is our baseline. Like, this is our foundation mm-hmm. for the whole book. And right. we're making sure that everything is in the trajectory that we want it, mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. So 1, acquisition, 2, development, 3, style guide. What's 4?
So what we do is then, once we do the proof of concept pages, the creator's back at the interior development. And then ultimately what happens is when they're done with the project, when they're done with all the interior pages, then we get to the final part, which is the book build. And the book build is where we're constructing the final book. And one of the things that we do is we force the InDesign card on everything, mm-hmm. So I know my creators need to letter where they need to letter. Like, I can't break the creative process for them and say, you need to learn InDesign. But so if they need to letter in Clip Studio, they'll letter in Clip Studio. If they need to letter in Photoshop, fine, letter in Photoshop. But ultimately, what we'll do is we actually hire freelancers who will copy and paste that text in the source files. Like, mm-hmm. say it was lettered in Photoshop, they'll copy from Photoshop, paste in InDesign, and set the files up that way. So here, we're basically getting all the text living in one document. We know the text is going to print all black.
Yep.
It's vector text. Mm-hmm. So it's nice, crisp and sharp. Mm-hmm. And then for editing later, we're editing all in InDesign.
Right.
We're not jumping between hundreds and hundreds of files to make edits. Mm-hmm. You know, so we take cues from different, so like where the proof of concept pages are inspired by prose design in the book build stage, this is where we take a lot of cues from picture book design. And this is where we put a lot of emphasis on the front matter and the back matter of the book. Mm-hmm. So the pages in the front and the pages in the back, and really having fun with those, like really using those pages to aid the story.
Right.
So, you know, is it like kind of like, can we use those pages as like an interstitial that leads you to the first page of the book? Or, you know, maybe we just want to do really cool, complex patterns. So it's nice. While the text is being moved into InDesign, now our focus is really kind of dotting the I's and crossing the T's with all the, right, the design details of the book.
Where does the cover come in? I assume it's already in at this point.
Yeah, I mean, so the cover, my MO with the cover is when we are ready to launch a book onto a season, that's when we start the conversation about the cover. If a creator wants to work on it sooner, they can do that. They just have to tell me they want to do that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then we will. But that's my trigger.
Do you have to have a final cover when you're launching? Can you just have a sketch?
If we have to, I mean, and that's the other challenge is, you know, again, many of our books, we have one, maybe two people working on them. So if there's delays, you know, like there, you know, in finishing the book itself, sometimes I have to push off the cover. Like I have no choice. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, but I really, you know, urge my creators to try to get something done for that meeting, because that's the first time, you know, sales, marketing, and, you know, everyone else has seen the book since it was acquired. So we want to build as much of a buzz as we can.
Again, I know the answer is it depends as far as timeline goes. So like you just said, from acquisition to launch, from when this illustrator listening in, thinking to themselves, I'm going to submit. From that point to final files going to the printer, what generally should people be expecting? Because this is a question. I mean, this is,
yeah,
I hear this a lot. I see this a lot. You know, illustrators, especially on social medias, are rightfully, I'd say, complaining that it's not enough time. Publishers aren't giving illustrators enough time.
Yeah,
that's a side point. The question remains, how long generally does it take from acquisitions to final files going to the printer?
I would say on average, we give about 2 years to get a book done. You know, I think there's a lot of people taking on graphic novels and there's a perception that they're like picture books.
Yep.
And they're not picture books. No. And there's you know, this could be a whole other 40-minute conversation.
There you go.
They're not picture books for a ton of reasons. But I think one of the big things is that creating a comic is a very physical process. Like I can't tell you how many creators I have on my docket that have tendon and carpal tunnel damage, mm-hmm, because of the kind of work that goes into it. And I would say as a creator, if you find yourself in a negotiation stage in the beginning, that is the time to really set expectations right from the onset.
Right.
You know, like when you're talking to an editor who's interested in acquiring your book, you know, communicate to that editor that you're going to need the time to get the book done, you know? And because, I mean, the thing is with trade, we don't do assembly line production, mm-hmm, you know, like we don't have a separate penciler and then the separate inker and then the separate letterer and a separate colorist. You know, it's typically one, maybe a separate colorist.
Mm-hmm. Or an assist, like a second colorist.
Right.
To help the original.
Exactly. So I think like something like that is definitely that needs to be communicated. I mean, it's because, you know, from the publishing standpoint, they want to they're looking at it from like, how are we best going to sell this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we think it's going to sell best if we can get it to market on this date. And it's just communication. Like yeah. you, as a creator, you have to make sure you're communicating with the publisher, and the publisher has to make sure that they're communicating with the creator, because there's a whole other set of factors with creating a graphic novel that a ton of people are not used to. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. I can almost hear someone say, yeah, but I'm afraid to say I need 2 years. I need 3 years, and worry that they'll lose it. You know, publisher will be like, well, sorry, can't do that.
I mean, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, I wouldn't go excessive with your time frame and getting it done.
Right.
But if that's the time you need, then that's the time you need. I mean, you know, right. It's like if a publisher is really pushing to say, like, I'm sorry, but we really think that we would, you know, we need to get this, you know, to market in a year and a half. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, that's some self-reflection time, and you have to say, all right, well, I mean, can I get that done? And if you don't think you can, then what do you need to get it done?
Right.
And then you can then volley back and say, okay, well, in order for me to make this, then this is what I need. And then, you know, suggest like, you know, a colorist to do the color for the book, or yep. I'm going to need, you know, or a flatter to help me with the color or something like that.
Yeah. What do you wish people knew about graphic novels that they just don't know? Like, what's one thing that you were like, man, God, I wish everyone knew this.
You know, it's so, you can do so much with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I think like a lot of people process information differently. And, you know, like I am a slow reader. I am notoriously a slow reader. As a kid, I tried to take, you know, my parents, you know, tried to get me to take speed reading classes, and I took them, and it just didn't do a world of good for me at all. and it's interesting. It's like, if you look around the world, whether, you know, it's like France or Japan, like the comic medium is so interesting. Like it's up there with prose, and the range of publishing is up there with prose. Mm-hmm. Like in Japan, there's a series that's all on wine. And so you can learn about wine through comics. And I think stateside, we're starting, you know, like the stigma to reading comics isn't there as much as it was when I was a kid.
Right.
Everybody used to tell me, like when I was a kid, like if you only put more time in reading real books than comics.
Jeez.
And
good God.
But it was there, and it's still a little bit there. Mm-hmm. But I think in the grand scheme of things, I think that if, you know, like people realize you can do so much more, and you can communicate a lot of great topics in the medium, and it's really powerful, and it can be really cool.
Yeah. I recently was talking to somebody who, I'll try and keep this as generic as possible to for protect their anonymity here, but they work on graphic novels. They had a meeting with their publisher. I'm trying not to use gender pronouns here.
Right, right.
With their publisher, essentially saying, we need to pay our illustrators more than we are for the graphic novels that we're creating. To which the publisher said, well, they don't have to say yes to getting the job offer.
Yeah.
You know? It's,
I think, honestly, there's a, in the way I look at it in my mind, is that there's sort of a, in trade publishing in general, there's a bit of a, it's a, in, graphic novels are in this sort of adolescent stage. It's kind of growing into itself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when you look at cover design in general, or prose design, if imprints are designing their own interiors and not using templated interiors, mm-hmm. or if you look at picture book design, you know, it is, there's a process to it, and it's pretty consistent amongst all the publishers. Mm-hmm. And with that process, there is an understanding of each of those mediums, the work that goes into it, mm-hmm. and what is going to be in the best interest of both the creators, but also the publishers. Right now, graphic novels in trade are not standardized. Like, right. everybody is kind of producing them in their own way. And because of that, you know, there's a different understanding or a different perception of the mediums. Because, you know, as we were saying before, a lot of people do treat them like picture books, and they really are not that product.
Nope.
That's why it's important for me, you know, to kind of get a bit of a standardization across the board, mm-hmm. to get people to understand, like, this is a different format. It has its own considerations. It has its own factors. Mm-hmm. And you know, and if there can be more of a baseline understanding and standardization, then I feel like we can kind of grow out of this sort of adolescent stage that we're in right now, mm-hmm. and get to a better understanding. But it is hard. I mean, yeah. you know, it's, you know, because I mean, you know, there's people who are yearning to get picked up and published, but I think the important thing is to, you know, like, I think as a creator right now, you know, the best advice that I can say is just communication. Like, really, you know, from the outset, outline the things that are really important to you and make sure that you are, letting that public or potential publisher know those right from the onset.
Yeah. So that's your best piece of advice. Remembering again that there are people listening who are interested in graphic novels, or just, you know, folks who might want to try their hand at it. What would be your second best piece of advice that you'd like to share with them directly?
It's like, it's really just be active, you know, put your stuff out there, you know, post it, listen to feedback. Don't be afraid of the feedback that you're going to get, from readers. You know, I think the most important thing is when you are creating what you want, and don't put boundaries on what you want to create. Mm-hmm. There's so much that you can do in the medium. You know, find your home and just play and have fun. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, this is the way I tell everybody. It's like, we make comic books. this is awesome, you know. So just keep it fun and keep it enjoyable and be persistent, stay at it, and, you know, like, that way, like, no matter what outcome comes of things, at least that there's a certain amount of pride that you have with what you've been doing.
To learn more about Kirk, visit kirkbenshoff.com. If you enjoyed our conversation, please share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, and provide a positive rating and review. Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/illustrationdept. In return, you'll receive our soft enamel pin, a reusable discount code for 10% off, and access to patron-only episodes we're calling Extra Credit. This podcast is produced by the Illustration Department, a global leader in online education for illustrators. Visit us at illustrationdept.com for class offerings, testimonials, the alumni showcase, the podcast show notes, our forum, the bookshop, and more. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.